D. Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you, joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com by Kevin Woodley of NHL.com, NHL.com's resident goalie guru. Kevin, I'm glad you're on the show. Good to talk to you. As you might imagine, we've spent a lot of time this season discussing the play of UC Saros, which has not been where we are accustomed to seeing UC Saros this season. We're happy to have you because you can get into the technical aspect of goaltending with us. As you analyze UC Saros' play this season, what are you seeing that might be different from him than in past seasons?
Well, what if I, before we get to the technical, I talked about some of the statistical evidence, working and having access to ClearSight Analytics, which does as good a job, I would argue a better job than anyone, of actually rating shot quality and breaking it down. That's one of the things that jumps out at me, is just how low his expected save percentage is. It's the 12th lowest in the National Hockey League amongst any goalie that's seen 250 chances this year. The only guy who's sort of playing workhorse number one minutes that has a lower expected, so a tougher defensive environment among the sort of the starters are Igor Shesterkin and Alex Nedeljkovic. Like everybody else that sort of has a harder environment around them isn't playing nearly as much. So I think that goes into it a little bit. And I guess I would ask this question too, from a performance standpoint, where do people think UC ranks right now in the National Hockey League?
I think most people, Kevin, look at the back of your hockey card kind of numbers, wins, losses, right, save percentage, goals against, and they compare it to past years, and they say right, he's having a bad year, or he's overrated, or hey, oh my gosh, they just signed this guy to an 8-year contract. Is he going down the tubes? But you can put it in context a lot better. For example, Adam and I just looked it up recently. We've been tracking this. In terms of success, right, in wins and losses, he is by far the goalie that gets the lowest goal support, right? He's got 2.1 goals per game in his starts, and of goalies that have played 25 or more games, that's by far the fewest per start. So you have to look beneath the surface to try to right, analyze in context his performance. This is a tough job.
Exactly. And I guess that's there's two parts to that, right? And actually, you bring up a great point about run support. I remember back when I was first sort of starting to dig into the world of goaltending at this level, Mika Kiprusoff was one of the best in the league at that time. And the Flames played a very defensive style of game. And it was the first time I sort of went around the league and asked as many goalies as I could, like, hey, what would you rather have? A team that locks it down defensively but might not score for you, or a team that's going to give up some chances and your job is a little tougher, but they're going to put the puck in the net and you've got some margin for error? And unanimously, guys would choose the margin for error. Give me a team that can score. So you give me that statistic, and I gave you the one I had about the environment, and what that tells me is he's got neither. So not only is he facing tougher chances than most of his peers, like I said, Shesterkin's sort of the only guy at that top tier playing that much that's got a tougher environment, but he's also not getting the run support. So it's a pretty tough way to live as a goaltender. And listen, the other part here is I'm not looking to make excuses. You brought the goalie guy on, so he's automatically going to bail out the goaltender. I'm waiting for the replies on X already, right?
Yes.
And inherently, I do want to avoid that little at the door to take away the goalie union card. But, when I look at these numbers, UC Saros, yes, is he in the top 10 in the league in adjusted save percentage, which matters much more to me than actual save percentage? And that's where he has been for the past number of years? No, he slipped. He's at 23rd. But he's still well above expected. He's outperforming his environment. And probably at a level that might surprise some people. The next guy above him on my list, again, amongst guys that have seen, just try and filter out the guys who have seen less than 250 shots, right? Small, tiny sample guys. But like the next guy above him, and just barely on this list, is Andre Vasilevsky. And I've seen people talk about Vasi in terms of having a bounce back worthy of, you know, maybe not Vezina Trophy because Hellebuck's running away with it alongside Logan Thompson, but at least being in the conversation. And he's at plus 1.2 adjusted save percentage, 1.2% above expected, and UC's at 1.1. So goaltending does not exist in a vacuum. The environment around these guys matter. I'll give you another comparison. Connor Hellebuck, his expected save percentage right now in the NHL is one of the higher ones. They've got a great defensive environment in Winnipeg. They got a great thing going in terms of him being an elite number one goaltender, a workhorse goaltender. Him also being behind a team that not only defends well overall, but defends to his strengths. His environment is 20 points higher than UC Saros. So anybody that looks at those counting numbers, those back of the hockey card numbers and looks at save percentage and says, well, look where UC is compared to Connor Hellebuck, add 20 points to UC Saros's before you're sort of at least trying to level the playing field. Otherwise, it's not even apples and oranges. It's hockey pucks and basketballs, right? Like, it's not the same thing. So that's the context that I think is important. And I'm going to be honest with you. I'm just going to add a couple filters here because about a third of the way through the season, and I know things were not going well in Nashville, one of the things that I said to, because I have a number of weekly radio shows that I do across the country here in Canada with a couple different networks, and one of the things that was my popular point, because I was hearing a lot of this talk about UC Saros early in the season, and I was pushing back on it because to me it was the opposite. Early this year, through December 1st, so that's roughly a third of the season. We go December 15th to make it a little bit of a bigger sample size. But through that point, what I was saying to people is, my goodness, are the Nashville Predators wasting a hell of a year from UC Saros? He was top six in adjusted numbers through December 15th. He was outperforming a bad environment. And again, you're not going to see that in the regular numbers because the environment was bad, like uncharacteristically bad for Nashville. And so I think that context is really important. Now, to go from where he was 6th to 23rd now, there's been a slippage. And my argument over the past number of years, and as I build up more sort of sample size and experience with sort of how to judge guys, small samples, large samples, is that it can be really hard. What's one of the hardest things to do is to outperform a tough defensive environment for a long period of time. It's one of the things that we see with Jordan Binnington in St. Louis. I mean, the narrative after they won the Cup is they were a great defensive team, but pretty much after they won the Cup, they weren't. They stopped being a great defensive team, and they were largely Binnington bailing them out, which is why when Canada picked him, I had no problem with it. Even though he was in a down season this year, he was top 10 in the NHL, the only Canadian in the NHL top 10 in the previous 5 years combined for adjusted numbers. But it was always hard to see because the environment was so poor. The chance quality was so great. And it was also, when you looked at it and you really sort of looked through some of the rolling stats, even with the adjusted numbers, there was a lot more up and down. He would have great stints, especially great starts, but it would eventually wear him out. Because I think starters and workhorse guys playing behind a bad defensive team, it's one of the hardest things to do is to remain consistent. And so, yes, has Saros dropped off after a fantastic start? Absolutely. But I'm not even sure, based on some of the narratives that I heard, that anybody really recognized he was having a fantastic start.
I think that's a fair point. And Kevin, one thing that we observe, and you know Chris Mason well, he talks about a lot, when you don't have the margin for error, and this goes along with what you're saying, that it can get to you mentally as well as the physical toll of facing the heat. You start to maybe have a little more self-doubt. Maybe you lose your confidence just a little bit because nobody from the outside is patting you on the back and say, hey, you know, when we adjust your environment, you're doing well. All they see is that you have an L next to your name or you gave up 4 goals, even on a night where you could have easily given up 6 or 7 goals.
Yeah, and both things are hard. And like I said before, like that's, you know, I went back to the Kiprusoff example, but I think that was one of the toughest things for John Gibson in Anaheim for years. Like, they just didn't score. And so if you go into every game, and I had this conversation with Ryan Miller, who was there alongside Gibson in Anaheim for a couple of years, if you go into every game thinking that one or two is one or two too many, that's a really tough way to live as a goaltender. And when you add that to a porous, and again, uncharacteristically so for the Nashville Predators, but a porous defensive environment, like that's a double whammy. You know, you guys talked about technical. You know, there's no such thing as a easily, totally predictable environment, especially in today's NHL. I mean, the dynamic nature of scores and the way they've learned to, you know, hide releases and work with screens to take away goalies' eyes and all these different elements. Like, it's never been harder to be a goaltender. I do see some slight adjustments in his depth management that I think are probably really hard to hold on to. And I actually wanted to find more time, and I apologize. I wanted to sort of look at more recent film. I felt like he'd backed off a little bit in terms of his depth, and that's a good thing. We're seeing that trend around the league, and it doesn't just have to be the obvious ones like Connor Hellebuck, but a guy like Dustin Wolf is breaking sort of the stereotypes of small goaltenders and this idea that because they're small, they need to be more aggressive. I mean, you see skates as well as anyone in the league. He beats plays on his skates set and square better than anyone in the league. And I think the sort of knee jerk to that is, well, then that means he can be further out because he's so fast. And while that's true to an extent, the nature of the game and the way goalies are being attacked make that harder and harder to do. We keep hearing about everything is east-west. Well, we need to start thinking about depth in terms of goaltending as not just north-south relative to the goal line, but east-west relative to the posts. And the further we play out in both directions, both north-south and east-west outside of our posts, the longer we have to travel to get to our next spot as all these plays are going east-west on us. And so this is a mindset that we're seeing maybe shift around the NHL. I'm seeing a number of goalies. When I look at the top 10 list in the NHL and I see guys like Logan Thompson who have adopted it, Dustin Wolf, Connor Hellebuck all up there, I think it's something that can apply to UC. And in my conversation with him early in the year, it seemed to be something he was trying to apply. But when the environment's this tough, it's really hard to hold on to it. It's really hard to trust a change like that when you're, you know, being asked to, you know, for lack of a better term, stop bullets in your teeth and there's all these grade A's all around you. And when I look at his performance this year, he's actually really above in most categories. Broken plays, scrambles, screens. He's outperforming his environment. It's lateral plays, slot line east-west, and breakaways uncharacteristically where he's well below. So I think overall, his season isn't nearly as bad as it looks, and yet it's still true that it's not up to UC Saros standards. But I think you can find explanations for it by looking into what's going on in front of him as much, without ignoring, but as much as what he's trying to do in the crease.
Now, with that being said, you talked a little bit about his size. And, you know, watching him for Nations, and you see these two huge goalies in Bennington and Hellebuck, and then you look at UC Saros, and he's one of the smaller goalies in the league. I think on average we looked it up, and it was around 6'2 with the goalies, and not many of them fall below 6 feet. But UC is one of those guys. And with his ability to be technical, do you think, judging by the numbers that you've seen, do you think there's any correlation with his size and his ability to play behind not a good defensive team?
Especially as he ages.
Exactly,
Kevin, a lot of people are saying, well, hey, when he gets to be 33, 34, mm-hmm. and he's in the middle of this 8-year contract,
and he's
can
not
he
as
sustain?
Quick and, yeah.
Man, his technical, like, when I say technical, I don't just mean, like, yeah, like his skating, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's what I mean. Like, the efficiency, it's not just the speed and power, it's the efficiency of his skating that allows him to generate that speed and power and beat those plays to the spot. So a lot of that, to me, a lot of that speed is technical. Like, there's a foundation to the way he moves, an efficiency and a power, the way he sort of holds his edges so patiently and holds on to them. Like, I mean, you could make that argument about a lot of different guys. I don't think UC as a smaller goalie is over-reliant on athleticism. And so can athleticism fade with time? Yeah, perhaps. You know, I think Bennington's, is he listed at 6'1 or 6'2? you know, we're seeing Dustin Wolf have success as a 6 foot, and that's probably a generous listing for him, goaltender with the Calgary Flames. I think it's really easy to look at size. I think it's the default even for a lot of coaches. But UC is one of a very small handful of guys that has produced elite numbers over several seasons in the past 3 years. And again, this year it's not in that elite top 10 category, but it's not as far down as people think. I'd be less worried about it, to be frank. I think you put this guy behind the structure at a base level that he's used to, and it's not like it was the 95 Devils he was playing behind before, but at least something a little more predictable, and you'll see him have the success that he's had in the past. I am far and away from being willing to cash my chips or eager to cash my chips on whatever UC Soros stock I've bought to this point. I just don't. If anything, we're actually seeing a trend. And you mentioned 6'2", and maybe that's the ideal, but we're starting to see success from guys that are, you know, they used to be that everybody wanted 6'4", 6'5". And as the game gets so fast east-west, if the 6'4", 6'5" can't move, you know, there's some thought and some talk and some trend around the guys who are 6'1", 6'2", and maybe even 6 foot, maybe being better suited for that game. I mean, you can't replace the square footage that a bigger goalie covers. But if he can't get side to side without closing up holes, then it doesn't do you much good in a lot of the way that teams are attacking today, or it doesn't do you as much good as maybe people thought before the game shifted to all this east-west play and low slot line attacks, and understanding that making a goalie go from one side of his crease to the other is your best way to score on him. So there are elements, screens and stuff that will be harder for him, but I'm not selling my UC Soros stock anytime soon.
Kevin, real quick before we let you go, is I know you've got something coming up around the corner here, but the other thing that comes up when you have, you know, the standards are high, he signs a long-term contract, you're in the shadows of Pekka-Rinne, hasn't won a playoff series. How much do you put that on a particular goalie?
How many has he had healthy? One?
Three.
He's played three, and one of them was in the bubble in 2020 when he was sort of on the rise, surpassing an aging Pekka-Rinne. So really two in a normal season, if you will. One year, of course, he got him there and then got hurt and didn't play a couple years ago when the Avs won it.
Right, that's the one I'm thinking of, and I'll be honest with you guys, I've forgotten everything about the bubble. Tried to put it out of my memory, so I apologize for being a little low in my estimate there. Listen, until you do it, you haven't done it, and that's fair. Like, and the same can be said as a guy, you know, that same statement I would have made as he shifted to the number one role from the backup role, right? Like, all the signs were there that he could be a great number one goaltender, but until you've done it, you haven't done it. And so you could say that of the playoffs. It's funny, I thought the Canucks did a really good job last year of creating chaos around him, and that there might have been a little bit of positional chase in his game in and outside and around his post, and that they got him scrambling in a way that I felt was almost uncharacteristic and maybe needed to become uncharacteristic. And when I talked about the depth changes he was making in my conversation with him earlier this year, I felt like that was in part a reaction to that. And I thought those were all positive changes. But it's really hard to hold on to those when everything around you isn't going well, when you don't have positive results to reinforce those types of changes. So, I mean, maybe that criticism is fair. I just, you know, top of my head, and obviously you guys know the Predators and expectations a hell of a lot better than I do up here in Vancouver, where the expectations have been quite low for quite a long time. But, you know, I wouldn't know how many of those series he was favored in, they were favored in. I don't have it in front of me to look up how he's performed relative to it. You know, I know talking to some people there after last year's playoffs, I think they were surprised to see again that his numbers, even though I thought there were things in his game that he could adjust, and I think he has, that his numbers last year in the playoffs, again, relative to the type of quality they gave up, he wasn't the problem. And so, to me, it always sort of comes back to that. And I get it, you sign him to a big contract, and you sign your goalie to that, you know, that elite-level contract, and you expect them to be able to maybe steal one. But when the environment gets as loose as it has gotten this year, and I think in the playoffs too, you can make that argument when I looked up the numbers last year, at some point there's only so much the goalie can do. And, you know, in game 6 where he holds them, he holds Vancouver to one, and they just can't beat a guy at the other end who ended up being quite beatable by the end of the next round. I don't know that I pin that on UC Saros.
Kevin Woodley of NHL.com joining us on D-Mace, Vingit and Donna. Kevin, thank you so much for your time. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, guys.
Mm-hmm. Kevin Woodley joining us on the program, 615-737-1025. We will discuss what Kevin said there. We'll also continue a conversation I heard on Robbie and Rex Road this morning. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingit, 1025-1063. The game.